Richie and John, we're here to surprise. Freedom and pride, we're living out loud, celebrating our community with a vibrant crowd. Freedom and equality, let it be clear. Being who you are, a fun, frisky, and out loud queer. From Mutual Broadcasting, we're breaking free. Living our truth, just you listen and see.
From the Mutual Broadcasting System, this is the voice of LGBTQ plus news and life-focused content. The Richie and John podcast. No bullshit, just reality for the community and allies around the globe. Here are your hosts, infinitely wiser, smarter and kinder than everyone in the Trump administration. Combined, definitely uncensored, even if they are not uncut. Richie Roy and John McMullen. Give them hell, boys.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Richie and John. It is Newsday Tuesday, and we are back after a little break Saturday. Sort of just, we were busy doing stuff, we were making plans, and we have some great substantial Saturdays in the works, but we thought we would wait to bring you the best of the best.
We do, and I have to admit, this is where I have to come clean about the fact that as much as I took some time off to get our new studio together here in Palm Springs, there are still a bunch of tech bugs that we're working out. And I have a feeling that we may be off again this coming Saturday. And so until further notice, I think we're going to be at Newsday Tuesdays. Hopefully we'll have that fixed in the next week, maybe two, and then we can get back into our regular schedule. One of the advantages of being in this new studio is that it has all the capacity for us to do TV from here, video from here, and we want to be able to have some guests in and stuff like that. So it's kind of critical that all the wiring and everything works. And right now we're at the whim of a engineer who we have to allow him to do his day job as well. So that's what's going on.
Exactly. We will still bring you the most important LGBTQ news that you need for the week in the meantime. And we've got some stories for you this week, and I think we should just jump right into them.
Absolutely. So, Richie, why don't you start us off with the Supreme Court and the impact that they're having on trans rights? I saw that Shannon Minter, who is with the National Center for LGBTQ Rights, who is their attorney and who did such a brilliant job fighting for marriage equality some years back now, that she who... that he is a trans attorney is not so excited about defending cases for our trans community at the moment.
Yeah, it's a tough time. Actually, it's a tough time generally at the Supreme Court. We just recently, on Monday, there was a decision where they're allowing the current administration to essentially dismantle the Department of Education, firing almost everyone there, and they just keep siding with this administration on all kinds of things, basically ceding any sort of checks and balances whatsoever on the sort of unbridled power of one of the dumbest men on the planet. And so we did see a case this this term that was not favorable to our trans folks. The Supreme Court's recent ruling in the Scrimeti case has dealt a, quote, cruel blow to transgender rights and have complicated legal battles for advocates like Shannon Minter, the legal director at the National Center for LGBTQ Rights. Minter reflects on the court's reversal on trans rights in just 5 years, telling LGBTQ Nation service members have faced setbacks. Quote, the Supreme Court's big-footed us and issued a stay, he said, highlighting the precarious future for trans service members. Minter also criticizes the court's ruling in Scrimeti, which allows bans on gender-affirming care for trans youth, calling it a, quote, complete muddle. He emphasized the need for clarity amidst a growing wave of anti-LGBTQ plus legislation as advocates prepare for a long legal fight ahead. So there's a ton of stuff happening. So Scrimeti was obviously the case that banned Gender, Freedom, and Care for Trans Youth. Obviously, kind of the first step towards trying to just make life untenable for trans youth and eventually trans adults, you know, with the ban on transgender service members. We're seeing a lot of action at the state level. And yeah, this Supreme Court is not our friend. It just really isn't. And I think that, you know, the point about it being a complete muddle is really important, because one of the things is this Supreme Court is making decisions. They aren't sort of sticking a lot of times to even what the question before them is.
Right.
There will be a narrow question in front of them that's, you know, for instance, like, what's the proper level of scrutiny, or, you know, some kind of narrow question of law. And then in oral arguments, the conservatives on the court just kind of go into the merits. They kind of blow the thing wide open and then make this broad, sweeping ideological opinion that was not what was asked for and wasn't even before them.
Right.
And so
this is how you pay back all the people who've been covering your vacations and other things, you know, these other expenses, maybe buying the house that your mom lives in, and things like that. You know, it's just unbelievable. What I don't understand is how they think this is going to work when somebody gets elected from the other side and is going to have precedent set for them to be equally as corrupt in a way that they don't like.
Yeah. I mean, but this is, they've always done this. This is like their whole thing is like, when we're in power, complete power. When the other guys are in power, I mean, like, Biden couldn't open an envelope with getting struck down by the Supreme Court, you know, like, enjoined from opening the envelope. Meanwhile, Trump can just kind of destroy the whole government, you know, just sort of throw out there that maybe birthright citizenship isn't in the 14th Amendment, which is like, it, you know, or like, it is not covered. And this Supreme Court's like, yeah, you know, we'll let that one ride. You know, let's see how that one plays out. So they're super hypocritical. And you're right. It's always been a double standard, though, with the conservatives. You know, nothing Biden or Obama or Clinton did was acceptable. It was always, you know, outside of the realm of authority. But if it's Trump or, you know, whoever's next,
anybody who's outrageous,
right, then sure, go ahead, do it. It is, you know, and I think in coming weeks and months, I think we're going to try to get some folks who are working on these cases, you know, sort of trans rights cases and some of the other cases that have been before the Supreme Court recently to come talk to us about how to go.
I've been trying to get Shannon on the show, and I hope that we'll be able to do that sooner than later.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'd also like to get John Davidson on from the ACLU's LGBTQ and HIV projects as well. He's a very bright attorney. He is the significant other of a good friend of mine who lives in San Francisco, and I think we'll get him one of these days. So.
Yeah, so stay tuned for some good stuff in that regard. Arizona has a school district there has settled a discrimination lawsuit with former teacher River Chunai, who identifies as non-binary. Let me read that again. So in Arizona, a school district has settled a discrimination lawsuit with former teacher River Chinui, who identifies as non-binary. Chinui alleged that board members Heather Rooks and Rebecca Hill engaged in discriminatory, retaliatory, and torturous actions following their email advocating for support of trans and non-binary students. Chinui claims Rooks and Hill launched a smear campaign, falsely accusing them of grooming children, leading to harassment and vandalism. Despite being cleared of unprofessional conduct, Chinui resigned from Desert Harbor Elementary School after enduring relentless discrimination. Chinui announced that part of the settlement will support their nonprofit, the Family Prism Project, Prism like PRISM project, aimed at helping LGBTQ+ families.
But you know why you have to clarify that, Richie, is because anymore, especially in the desert Southwest, it's not unusual for them to set up a federal family prison project where they and put kids and parents in the same facility. They just separate them so that they cannot be with one another before they ship them off to the moon or Mexico or wherever it is that they send them.
Exactly. During a recent school board meeting, Chinui thanked Rooks for, quote, helping push me from quiet teacher to proud advocate, stating, without your public comments, I may never have been radicalized into this work. So,
lo and behold.
Yeah, I mean, in Arizona, of all places, I'm glad that this, you know, that this school district settled. I'd be interested to know kind of what the, I'd like to know more about this one, actually, because these days, people are so dug in that they must have been really bad. This must have been a bad case for them to settle it. Because, you know, again, these days, that it's like with the administration signaling how little regard they have for queer folk, non-binary folk, trans folk, gay folk. You know, it's pretty much like a dog whistle. Like, go ahead, discriminate, treat them like shit. Doesn't matter. We don't care. So this must have been pretty bad for them to settle. And, you know, we don't talk a ton, actually, about our non-binary friends in the community. But I think that's actually, a thing that we should try to cover a little more. I have a sense, just kind of anecdotally, that non-binary is a really big part of our community, especially with the younger folks. When I just sort of talk with friends who have, elementary school or junior high aged children, non-binary is, if not the majority, it's there's a big plurality of youngsters who identify as non-binary these days.
Can we define that for people who have no concept of what it means? I think a lot of people think of that as being, you know, people who are trans or questioning or, you know, maybe, you know, somewhere else on that alphabet spectrum. How, give us an idea as to the breadth of the non-binaries among us.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a pretty broad umbrella, but it's basically when you step outside of the gender construction of male and female. And I think it's also a lot of times stepping outside of some concepts of even of trans identity, where there's an idea that you would transition from, let's say, assigned male at birth to female, or assigned female at birth to male. It's a little bit more fluid, and so sort of rejecting, again, that binary. And I think, you know, it can intersect at times. It can with either, you know, being bisexual, or you can be completely, you know, queer or pan and non-binary. And it's just kind of, again, just saying, like, I'm not interested in that, in sort of the either or here. And whether it has to do with sort of identity, you know, or expression, it's a really broad umbrella. And I think a lot of young folks are just finding it appealing because they don't want to be pinned down in any particular way on, you know, on their gender expression. So I think non-binary is something that is growing in acceptance and visibility. And I would like to talk more about it on the show. It'd actually be great to get on like a non-binary sort of activist to sort of walk us through what sort of non-binary looks like in 2025.
I have an idea for that. And I'll go to work on that this week. I have a couple of people in mind who might be perfect for that conversation. So we'll see if we can get some folk in here and talk about that. There is a number of other stories that we've got this week, including one that deals with the Treasury Secretary, and that is a former employee of the Treasury Department is speaking out about worsening conditions for LGBTQ+ staff under Secretary Scott Bessent. first openly gay Treasury Secretary. Kristen Bowis Hayes revealed that staffers are increasingly worried about being out at work despite Bessent's historic position. In a recent interview, Hayes stated, quote, "The removal of sexual orientation and gender identity from Treasury's EEO complaint forms is a procedural recognition of something that's already happening." Concerns escalated after House Democrats urged Bessent to maintain protections against discrimination. Hayes noted that the department has stopped processing anti-LGBTQ plus discrimination complaints and highlighted the departure of a former LGBTQ plus group board member due to explicitly transphobic treatment. Quote, "Employees are feeling like it's harder to find members of their own community," Hayes added. "Issues like the removal of gender-neutral bathrooms and a lack of pride events have contributed to a negative work environment for the LGBTQ plus employees at the Treasury Department." You know, it's just not going to, that stuff's just not going to change until we get rid of this administration.
Yeah, and
the whole mega mind rot that has overtaken our government.
Yeah, and we're seeing this in ways both big and small. You know, for instance, this EEO complaint form. That sounds like a little thing, right? Just a little piece of paper that's changed. But it's indicative of a mindset. We saw a story. It was too sort of, I think, just sort of, we didn't put it in our stories for the week, but it is something that was sort of out there, which is for the Stonewall memorial or the Stonewall as like a sort of a federal recognized place
landmark.
They removed trans from the website recently, very recently. They also removed bisexual, so now it just says gay and lesbian. Eventually it'll just say nothing, probably, but we're just seeing this kind of, you know, it reminds me a little bit of like in Back to the
Future. Absolutely nothing happened here in June of 1969, so just go home.
Right. It's reminding me a little of like the Back to the Future when he looks at the picture and it just sort of slowly starts to disappear. It's like that, you know, it's like you're watching in real time as there's just erasure of our community. And, you know, this Scott Bessent guy, you know, we had a term, my friends and I refer to this type of person as a Vichy gay, which is to say, because, you know, if you look at his, he's married to a man and is living that when they have two children through surrogacy. And so they're living their picket fence lifestyle. To hell with anyone else. I've got mine.
That it's a mid-century modern picket fence because they're from here.
Of course. But yeah. And so, you know, it's this class, you know, hedge fund, you know, yeah. Rich bitch, gay.
I got mine. Fuck y'all.
Exactly. And to just be kind of aligned with the, because if you want to be part of this administration, it's been signaled so clearly, you have to just do whatever the person in charge says. And Scott Bessent seems very happy to sell out any kind of morals that he may ever have had or any sense of community or identity, which maybe he never had to begin with. But it's clear that, you know, in this capacity, perfectly fine to signal to Treasury staff, you are not welcome here. And, you know,
he was probably the treasurer of his chapter of the log cabin retardlickens.
He probably was. He's just kind of, he's one of those gays where you're like, we don't want you. Can we return you to put you in a basket and put you on a fire department doorstep? Because like, we don't want you. Get out of here.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's just part and parcel of how this administration works. And I think when you think about things like Treasury and you think about things like defense, and all kinds of places, this is ultimately not only bad for LGBTQ employees and staff because they don't feel comfortable, like maybe won't have their job, but bad for the country because a lot of those are extremely skilled, talented people who are not going to be there anymore soon. We're seeing this brain drain, I mean, of scientists and economists, and anyone who has half a brain is being turfed out of this administration, and we're going to be left with the dumbest, you know, most sycophantic people making important decisions at what is left of our administrative state.
You know, I know this sounds like a pipe dream, but it's made me think lately about the fact that maybe what we need is we need one of our own or multiple of our own billionaires on the good side to put the resources out there to have a, some sort of a national collective of those brains and have those people, you know, behind the scenes commercially working on continuing to do things that develop and maintain the advantages that we have in this country, research and development wise in various sciences and, you know, different disciplines that we're going to need when it's time to restore order to the nation. Am I out of line?
I mean, I think that's it's a really ambitious goal. I mean, I think part of why it's hard is that infrastructure has been built for decades. I mean, really, the world that we live in now was built out of sort of post-World War II land-grant colleges and funding and, you know, setting up, you know, the
Well, that's
NSF.
Exactly it. It feels like it would be the perfect opportunity for various universities to be part of this network of kind of keeping things going behind the scenes and having them be privately funded by, you know, people who have that kind of wealth and actually give a shit about humanity?
Yeah, it depends on the kind of work, because I think if the work we're talking about is certain types of any kind of identity based work, I mean, I think that the administration is trying to make the case that if you even do that work, no matter how it's funded, that your status in terms of federal funding for other things is in jeopardy. So for that stuff, they're making the case that you can't do it no matter what, no matter how it's paid for. But maybe for the science stuff, maybe that's different. Yeah, maybe there is a way to do that. But at the same time, they're kind of putting the screws in all these different places in terms of
to what end, though?
Why are they doing this?
I know. I mean, but to what end? Because in the end, you know, like if you're killing cancer research, for instance, for kids,
mm-hmm.
you know, you're still going to have kids who are ultimately going to be stricken with and perhaps killed by that disease. And it's going to affect them. It doesn't pick and choose based on your wealth.
It doesn't. That's true. And this is something that I truly don't understand a lot of these policies, the direct outcome of them from this administration is either worsening sort of conditions or leading to death, you know, like things like, you know, what they're doing to, you know, dismantling the CDC.
I mean, it feels to me like they don't want those things, not because they don't do good, but they don't want them because they see it as it's a burden that they're more of the money that they have to give up because they're being taxed goes to that.
But it's so hypocritical, though, because when you look at this budget, they increase the budget of ICE so that swamps all of that discretionary spending. Yeah. It is a pittance. What we pay for science and all these FEMA and all these things, it's a pittance compared to the amount they were willing to just splash out to create a paramilitary in ICE that is only beholden to the president. So the idea that they're even doing it for fiscal responsibility reasons is a canard. They don't what they want is a Christian military fascist state. That's what they want to fund. And anything that doesn't fall into that, including higher education and science, because science is about truth. There's no science without facts and truth and testing and reality and quantitative outcomes. Those are all things that are scary to them because those are threats. Because if you have, you know, if you have someone, you know, if the current president says, which, you know, he says things like, gas prices have come down. It's now $1.95 a gallon for gas. That's demonstrably not true.
Right.
But if you don't have anyone crunching the numbers anymore, he can lie as much as he wants because no one can call him on his bullshit. And it's that for everything. It's and also, I mean,
Well, I will. And you will.
You're right.
I mean, but we both understand one of the basic tenets in life, and that is that if King Donald, if his mouth is moving, he's lying.
Right. Absolutely. So, yeah. So Secretary Bessent, I'm not surprised that he's being a traitor to the LGBTQ community. To the event, he may be gay. I don't think he's a member of our community. Probably never was. I wonder if he ever, like, went to a pride parade.
Yeah.
Probably didn't.
No, but he probably hooks up with hookers on Grindr and goes and does meth with, you know, freaks.
Another federal government story, the U.S. Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, the EEOC, has decided to resume reviewing discrimination cases brought by transgender individuals after a months-long halt. In a July email, Field Operations Director Thomas Colclough announced that complaints classified as, quote, meritless would once again be processed following the Supreme Court's Bostock versus Clayton County ruling, which does protect employees from discrimination based on gender identity. That is not that case is not that old and is still good law. And, you know, for how long, we'll see. But that is still the law of the land, even if the administration doesn't like it. So Colclough emphasized that cases related to hiring, discharge, and promotion would be reconsidered, though investigations into workplace harassment are sort of up in the air still. The cases will undergo increased scrutiny, including reviews by senior attorneys and acting EEOC Chair Andrea Lucas, who has expressed opposition to federal civil rights protections for transgender individuals. Critics, including Equal Rights Executive Director Noreen Farrell, have noted that the agency's previous stance contradicted Bostock. Attorney Adam Harrison stated, quote, make no mistake, transgender and non-binary people whose civil rights were violated were turned away during these last 5 months. So they did kind of put all these claims on hold and kind of dismiss them. They're back now. But when you look at the process, including, you know, review by this chair who doesn't believe in protections for trans individuals, I think what's happening here is putting in place a kind of kangaroo court process to prevent lawsuits that would probably be successful, arguing that if they didn't do them, they were violating Bostock. So they're doing the bare minimum. They're putting in place a process so it can look like they're in compliance with Supreme Court precedent while totally not actually caring.
Unreal.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those stories where when you first see the headline, you're like, oh, that's great news. They're back at it. They're looking at trans discrimination again. And then you read it and you're like, oh, this is a fig leaf. This is a canard. This is a red herring. It's all
like
the things.
Else.
It's all. Yeah. They're not interested in providing justice for aggrieved trans folks. They're just doing what they need to do to prevent it from being a lawsuit.
You know, I had a meeting on Sunday with a past guest of ours, Joyce Silver, the chairwoman of the Riverside County, California Democratic Party. And I also had a meeting yesterday on Monday morning with another guest of ours, Laura Meeks, who is a transgender veteran that we talked to before, previously on the show, who used to be in the United States Air Force. And it's interesting, Joy and I were talking about the fact that, you know, I mean, we talk about all these stories every single week. And really what she feels is happening is that the transgender community is the next Latinx community in terms of how this administration is literally going to come after people in the streets with their masked militia and start taking people and whisking them away in vans and shipping them out of the country. She is absolutely convinced that our trans element of our community, that they are highly likely to be one of the next major targets of this Gestapo action that we're seeing across the country. And that really scares me, because after them, it's going to be other queer people. And that may be an overreaction to some, but, you know, slowly but surely, these people are working to eliminate anybody who they see as a threat here and who are not going to get in lockstep with their way of thinking. And it's why it's so critical that we have to stay on top of responding to this stuff in communities large and small all across this nation, just as we saw people doing on No King's Day.
Yeah. No, and you see these sort of stories, you know, about folks.
I mean, who thought, honestly, that this is where we were going to be in the first half of 2025?
I mean, you know who I think thought that? It was Margaret Atwood. Look at The Handmaid's Tale. I mean, this is like the dumbest Gilead on the planet. You know, it's like it is. Folks have just kind of like sleepwalked into like complete fascism for the dumbest reasons, you know, yeah. Like literally because
to be led in this march by an idiot like Trump. God.
Yeah. No, I know
that guy is silly putty.
Yeah, it is something. It's worth vigilance for sure. And you know, I really enjoy seeing stories of local communities striking back at ICE thugs who will try to go anywhere and just harass and intimidate and get the most vulnerable people in the most vulnerable times. I saw a video of some hospital or some doctor staff, some, you know, people working at a clinic, basically barring the door because ICE just tried to come in to get someone who was, I think they're like literally to get healthcare. And they came in to try to, you know, take them out of the exam chair.
Yeah, it's so despicable.
Yeah. So,
you know, the next story, though, is one that gives me a degree of hope, because in a place that's as war-torn and screwed up as Ukraine is right now, and with the threat from, you know, one of the worst people in the history of the world, Vladimir Putin, and in a place that basically has not been really welcoming and affirming to queer people, this next story is kind of a feel-good story at this moment in time. Tell us what's happening over there.
Yeah, it is. So district court in Ukraine has made history by recognizing a same-sex couple as a family, which is a big victory for LGBTQ+ rights in the country. Zorian Kis, a diplomat, and his partner, Timur Levchuk, have lived together since 2013 and married in the U.S. in 2021. And they brought the case after the foreign ministry denied Levchuk spousal rights. The court's ruling, which relied on the Ukrainian constitution and the European Court of Human Rights precedents, acknowledge the couple's long-term partnership through shared finances, travel records, and witness testimonies. Keese expressed his gratitude, stating, quote, a very big and important step towards marriage equality in Ukraine, and a small victory in our struggle for simple family happiness. While public support for LGBTQ plus rights has surged, legal advancements remain slow. A proposed bill for civil partnerships is stalled in Parliament, but the ruling signals maybe some hope for progress in the future.
Yeah, I mean, if it can happen there, anything is possible, I think. I mean, you know, I think that when you go through the battle that they're going through, you look at human rights and dignity, those kinds of issues, in a whole different light, and you realize that it's an important step, you know, stepping forward and basically kind of adopting the policies and the procedures in the European Union if they want to be a part of a democratically run environment. And right. they're getting their shit together in that regard. So I was happy to read the story.
I'm happy to read the story too. And I think you bring up a good point, which is, I think also, I don't know if this is kind of me speculating, but in a moment where, you know, obviously Ukraine and Russia, there's such tensions and, you know, active military combat, and Russia is famously extremely hostile towards LGBTQ rights, that I would like to think that maybe there is an aspect of this, which is like, we are not them. We're not Russia. We're not bigots. And we represent something else. We represent democratic ideals. We represent, you know, our own sovereignty. And there might be a way in which that is part of the calculus here, is that, yeah. you know, we aren't Russia. You know, we're looking to our own constitution. We're looking to the European Court of Human Rights as a sovereign nation. And, you know, so there might be some, that might be part of what's happening here, is just, you know, making, living in that moment. I saw a thing today on social media, and I was puzzled, and I looked it up. So I don't know if you ever watched Chip and Joanna Gaines. Do you know this couple? They do home renovations in Waco, Texas.
Oh, no, I haven't seen them.
And I'm blanking on the name of their show. I used to watch it religiously. I really liked that show. But they're, you know, they are a Christian. They're very Christian, this couple. They live in Waco, and they do renovations of homes. And the thing is, like, the show never, for being on HGTV, which is where it was, they never had anyone gay on the show, which felt not weird. Pointed, but weird, because if you watch HGTV for 5 seconds,
right,
there are tons of gays on there. I mean,
well, and I think part of that is because most of the content that is on that channel is out of Canada.
Well, there's a lot out of Canada, but even the ones that aren't out of Canada, you know, like House Hunter International, and just generally, you know, I think that there are just there are a lot of gays also that like to do home renovations. Right. And yeah. It's part of the demographic. And so it always struck me as like kind of a little noticeable that they didn't have that representation. And it made sense, you know, because they are Christian. And also, like, realistically, like, what gays are going to want to move to Waco, Texas? But anyway, I saw a tweet that was basically like, Chip and Joanna Gaines stepped into it or something like that. And it was very opaque. And so I, like, Googled it. And so they have their own network now. It's called Magnolia Network. And it's sort of Magnolia, yeah. And it, you know, it's all their lifestyle brand, and they have, you know, other shows, and they have a whole slate of programming. And they have a show that is coming out, which is sort of like Frontier House, I think, which is basically some families move to like the Canada prairie and live in the way that you would have to live in like the 1800s.
Uh-huh.
You know, for a period of, you know, so where it's like no electricity, you know, all no, you know, you're living like in the past. That's the whole gist of the show.
Little House on the Canadian Prairie.
Yeah. But one of the families on that show on the Magnolia Network is a gay family. It is a gay male couple with their two twin boys, and they are doing, and they do it. And they're on the show doing this kind of pioneer living. And it has broken the brains of the MAGA Christian conservative fans of Chip and Joanna Gaines. And they're, I mean, they're like, you know, they're burning their shiplap. They're pissed. And there was, you know, Chip and Joanna Gaines, you know, I think they issued a statement or something that basically was, you know, they weren't holding, you know, a pride flag or something, but it was this kind of very watch and see what you think. You know, it was a very milquetoast thing, but they're standing behind their programming. And I thought that's kind of cool, actually. In this moment, to make that choice it's a choice. And especially given that, you know, again, having watched a lot of their I never really saw gay people on that show. So I want to learn more about it, but I do, you know, we're talking kind of about little, you know, silver linings. And so to see that kind of thing happen and see that moment, I was like, you know, okay, maybe I'll watch this show. Actually, that could be fun.
You know, I'm going to tie that story you just told into our next story, because speaking of somebody who I think is actually living their faith, honestly, on the North Carolina governor, Josh Stein, has vetoed several controversial anti-diversity bills, including one that sought to ban gender-affirming care for transgender inmates. The bill, HB 805, aimed to prohibit state funding for hormone therapy and surgeries while enforcing outdated gender classifications. In his veto, Stein emphasized, quote, "My faith teaches me that we are all children of God, no matter our differences, and that it is wrong to target vulnerable people." Could he be a real person of faith? I mean, seriously, the legislation originally began as a bipartisan effort to verify ages for adult websites, but morphed into a far-right initiative against transgender rights. Imagine that. Stein also rejected additional bills that would limit diversity funding in schools and state agencies, stating, quote, "We should not whitewash history, advocating for diverse perspectives in education." Despite Republicans holding a nearly veto-proof majority, they required Democratic support to override Stein's decisive vetoes and advance their controversial BS agenda.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Another piece of good news this week, I think.
Yeah, no, it's a piece of great news. And we need more of this. We need people to stand up against this, even when it's unpopular, maybe in your state, amongst a lot of people, to do what's right. And, you know, specifically this ban on gender-affirming care for transgender inmates, it goes to something bigger that I really is one of my things I really find most awful. And especially in this carceral moment where we're also just taking innocent people and throwing them in essentially concentration camps, which is the idea that if you're a bad person, that you don't deserve any rights. You know, you don't deserve to have health, you know, any kind of health care, you know, let alone gender affirming care. You know, one of the things that's always a pet peeve of mine is casual jokes about prison rape. People think it's hilarious. That is not, you are not sentenced to 10 years of non-consensual sexual assault. You're sentenced to a period of time in a facility. And yeah. So the idea that part
your punishment is the deprivation of your liberty, not to be tortured.
Yeah. And so it's kind of all a piece of that puzzle, you know. And so, you know, we've seen attempts in the past, you know, in different places to dehumanize trans inmates, you know, to put them in the wrong facility. If there's a men's jail, they try to put a trans woman in there, right, which also puts them right in the crosshairs of a lot of physical violence and sexual assault. So this is an important, this is an especially important one because, you know, it speaks to the humanity and dignity of trans inmates. So, you know, even if you are in jail, even if you did something wrong and were adjudged by a jury to have done so, you're still a human and you are afforded basic protections, including your gender affirming care, which again, it's like saying to someone, you know, because you, you know, I don't know, because you broke, because you
put men and women in the same cells in jails or prisons.
Right. It's sort of like saying, well, because you broke into a Chipotle and stole money out of the till, you don't get your insulin anymore, you know? Because you should just die. That's like, that's the argument. That's where that, like, the logical line goes. Yeah. It's just, well, you're not a human. We're going to throw the key, you know, throw you in there, throw away the key, and you can just fester and die. And conditions don't matter. Your medical care doesn't matter. Your food doesn't matter. And if there are a lot of-
if you ever had any question about any of that, the fact that right now we are dealing with this situation down in Florida with this so-called alligator Alcatraz,
mm-hmm,
where the conditions are deplorable, absolutely deplorable.
Yeah.
And that no human being should have to be incarcerated in that facility, which is not fit for housing anybody. It's just, when I read about what, you know, people were seeing when they went in to inspect, it just nauseated me.
Me too. And the idea that we've gotten to a point over however many years, and I think really, again, amplified and metastasized by Trump 1.0, MAGA, the whole thing, to where you can completely dehumanize people and be completely fine, whether it's Kristi Noem or what's his name, Homan, or the president, or J.D. Vance, or anyone who works at these facilities, that you can square with yourself treating any human that way. You know, they're saying it's like 35 people to essentially like a cage. And there's one toilet for all of them. The toilet is right next to all the beds, and the water that they drink is filtered out of that toilet, you know, in essentially a tent in Florida, you know, in the middle of summer. The fact that anyone would be happy to be complicit with that means that they have gone so far down into such a dark place that they truly don't believe that people who were asylum seekers or even green card holders who maybe did had a misdemeanor, that those people are actually not even humans.
It makes me embarrassed to be a citizen of this country, that we have tens of millions of our fellow citizens who have that much disrespect for human life. And these same people who claim that they are pro-lifers.
Mm-hmm.
That's what really tips me over the edge on some of these things. You know, you're either pro-life or you're not.
Mm-hmm.
And if you are, I'll tell you what, you definitely went to a different church than I did as a kid. I never heard any messages that indicated that that is how we should treat our fellow humankind.
Yeah, I don't think it's in there. I mean, maybe, you know, we can, you know, maybe do a control F on the Bible and search, you know, dehumanizing your neighbor. And let's see if Jesus said that you should do that. I don't think he did, actually. He probably said something a little bit the opposite. But you're right. These are also the people who are the most sort of sanctimoniously pious people about their religion. And I don't even have a religion. And I, you know, but I know enough about it to know that's not in there.
Well, and I think most of us, regardless of whether we were people of faith or not, I think most of us were at least raised with some message or some version of the quote-unquote golden rule, and that we have fallen so far away as a whole, that we have fallen so far away from that ideal. It gags me.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not even a 14-inch dick is going to gag me. That gags me.
Yeah. So, you know, I think...
It makes me want to puke.
Yeah, it's very dispiriting. You know, I think... but, you know, looking back at the stories from today, you know, we have some good, some bad. Mm-hmm. I think one of the things that all of them kind of highlight is... keep on it. Put the pressure on. Pay attention. Applaud bravery when it is there, you know, because it's rare now. So we will celebrate it when we see it, because we want to give that positive reinforcement, right? Do it even if it's not... do the right thing even if it's not popular. But, you know...
And can I ask, I know a lot of people watch a lot of different people on social media channels, and it's impossible for me to know everybody who is out there. I am in a recruitment mode right now, looking for some of the best voices, male and female, in our broader community. I'm not just talking about in the LGBTQ community, but in and among people who are fighting the megas. And anybody that you listen to, maybe that you watch on TikTok or that you follow on a YouTube channel or an Instagram or on, you know, any of that social media stuff that you think, wow, every time I hear them talk, I'm like, that person is fearless. They are fearless. They are on the ball and they want change. And I think the way that they do, that they articulate what I feel. I'd like to know about them. Please drop me a line, John, J-O-H-N, at Richie and John, RichieAndJohn.com, John at RichieAndJohn.com. If you have general comments for us, you can send them to info@RichieAndJohn.com. If there are things that you would like us to cover that we have not been talking about, or points that you would like to make and you would like to have us articulate those points, please send them to info@richieandjohn.com. We would love to hear from you.
Absolutely. 100%. And yeah, let us know. Yeah, because, you know, we can't see all the social media out there. There's a lot of it. And I have to say, if the person's on TikTok, I'm certainly not seeing them because I don't do TikTok. So let us know who these people are. In the meantime, we will keep our eyes peeled and our ears to the ground. Next Newsday Tuesday, we will bring you another batch of important stories for our community. And in the meantime, keep your eyes open. Again, info@richieandjohn.com. If there's a story you hear about that touches upon our community, especially if it's local, because that's the thing, too, is... We sort of source our stories from a broad array of places, but we can't know everything that's happening everywhere. You know, you may be in, you know, Meridian, Mississippi, and the local news may or you may hear from a friend about something that's happening at a local store. Let us know. We'd love to cover stuff that, you know, maybe isn't anywhere else. And that is stuff that you're going to bring to us. So reach out to us no matter what about anything. We'd love to hear from you and have a great week. John, I hope that you get all of that engineering stuff worked out in our new HQ in Palm Springs.
Yeah, I hope so too. And I look forward to our getting back to doing our substantial Saturday and Newsday Tuesday get-togethers with everybody. Hopefully we'll be back to that regular schedule here in the next week or two. So stay tuned. Keep an eye on the richieandjohn.com website, and we will look forward to our next get-together with you. Until then, may your shadow fall in pleasant places. Have a great week, Richie.
You too.
Richie and John is a production of the Mutual Broadcasting System. Opinions expressed are those of the hosts and their guests. If you have a problem with it, bugger off.
Freedom and equality, let it be clear. Being who you are, fun, frisky, and out loud queer. From Mutual Broadcasting, we're breaking free. Living our truth, just you listen and see. Truth, just you listen and see.